This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
I remember seeing a billboard when I was younger that was in our neighborhood that said, "You are not defined by your bank account." It's really important for us to remember that we are more than just the sum of our business.
Welcome to the Color of Money Podcast.com. I am Emory Peace. We're here today with our co-hosts, Bowman Keady, Daniel Dixon. Our guest today is Kimberly Gurry. And Kimberly, we just have so many questions for our dynamic guest today. She's a business strategist and a performance coach. And particularly right now in this day and time with what's going on, there's so many different questions about, you know, how we're going to deal with life, how we're going to deal with the market, how we're going to deal with the strategies. Kimberly is going to help us all because we all should be on the couch right now having some kind of therapy. And the thing about it, she's just passionate about investing in human capital. And she believes that one of the smartest and boldest investments with the highest return is your mental, spiritual health, so that you can be the best person that you can be. So I'm not going to go into all of those details because we want to get to these questions that we have for Kimberly. And I'm just super excited to have you here, Kimberly.
Thank you so much, Emmerich. And thank you for the opportunity to be on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Kimberly, maybe just to kick us off, you know, you have the opportunity to talk to so many people about what they're thinking, how they're feeling, and how they're reacting. I'd love for you to give us just your sense of sort of the moment we're in our industry, and what you sense sort of the tenor is from people and what people are dealing with. Because there's always what we're dealing with, and then there's what we make of it, how we interpret that. But what are people dealing with? And then we can get into like, sort of how are they processing it?
Yeah, I love that question. And I love that awareness that the market of the moment and what we make it mean are two separate things, right? Because what's happening to us is happening. It's happening around us. And how we decide to interpret it, that determines how we respond and react to it. And I would say that right now, what I'm noticing the most is there's a reconciliation happening. Agents and leaders have the year that they wanted to have this year. Are they happy with the results? There's reflection taking place. There's also an awareness that gaps still exist and goals were not met. So it's a really big reflection period right now, which can also be an opportunity to say, well, what can I do differently to have the results that I want? That energy is twofold. Some people are very happy, satisfied, and there's others who are not. And we can't sugarcoat that. There are people who are not happy with where they are financially, in their business, with their team dynamics, with leadership, whatever that might be. And so I would say the sentiment right now is reflection and recovery.
What does that look like? There's probably more people who don't want to reflect right now off of the way the last 18 months have been, really getting prepared. I mean, we've always talked about on this podcast and just being a high achiever, like, you know, Kimberly, that mindset is everything. But when you're down in the dumps or you've had a bad year or you've taken kicks to the stomach constantly over the last 12 months, like, how do you recover effectively to set your goals and intention and spirit to then be able to go win in the future?
One of the first things is to just recognize that you did win somewhere. Somewhere throughout the last 12 months, 18 months, there have been wins, no matter how small. Often it's just sitting back in gratitude and reflecting on those wins. I made it through the year. I'm still in real estate. I was able to pay my mortgage. Nothing was repossessed. Whatever it is, whatever your level of winning is, some good things have happened. And so it's important to remember that we are not defined by a production number. We're not defined by a volume number. We're not defined by GCI. I remember seeing a billboard when I was younger that was in our neighborhood that said, "You are not defined by your bank account." It's really important for us to remember that we are more than just the sum of our business.
I have the saying, everybody has a distorted perception of their reality. Either we're better than we think we are, or we're not as good as we think we are. we just had to figure out what's the balance and how to deal with our distorted perception. And I like the way that you said that when you said, basically, there's something that you can be grateful for.
And gratitude, we know, is the gateway that gets us more. Because if we focus on what's good, more good will start to attract itself because that's what we're paying attention to. And it's just like the phenom. If you buy a red car, suddenly after you buy that red car, all you see is red cars because it's top of mind. Well, the same thing is true. If you're looking for good, you're going to find good. And if you're looking for the bad, well, you're going to find the bad.
You know, the perspective you're sharing with us, oftentimes in a time when there's so much change and external stimulus, we lose sight of our own locus of power that we have to do that. And one of my favorite quotes that I'm always sort of re-reminding myself of is this Viktor Frankl, that between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space lies our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and our freedom. So this idea that stuff happens to us and how we choose to respond, both physically and mentally, how we choose to process that external stimulus is the place where we have power. And once we go past processing it or reacting to it, we sort of fall into this trap. Say, well, this happened to me, and then I interpreted it this way, and then I had to think about this, and I got a story about this, and that story leads to my whole demise. We miss that first place where it's right at the front end where the stimulus happens, and we get to choose how we process that stimulus, in which we have so much power to determine all the downstream outcomes that come from that. And so I'm really interested in work you've done with people to think about how we frame that. Like, so getting on that front end of this stuff happened. And you talked a little bit about gratitude as a major frame that one could insert there. Are there other things that you suggest we do if we find ourselves able to pause in that moment in between stimulus and response? What should be going through our heads?
One of my favorite coaching dynamics is looking at the drama triangle. And that's where you imagine a triangle. And at each part of the triangle, there are three roles that are played. One is the victim. The other is the persecutor. And the other is the rescuer.
We're always playing one, huh?
That's right, Daniel. We're always playing one. I'm either the victim. It's happening to me. It's a persecuting. They're doing this to me. Or it's the rescuer, you know, trying to fix everyone else's problems and often not focusing on our own. And what we want to do is stay inside of that space of the triangle and be able to stay in a state of neutrality where we can say, I'm not a victim to this because I have choice, because I can make a different decision. There is no one to persecute because I am responsible for my own choices and my own decisions. And the only one in here worth rescuing is myself.
So which one is at the head? Which one is at the point?
It all depends on where you are at any given day in your life.
Okay. Right? All right.
And it fluctuates in different relationships.
Right.
Right. So in your work life, you might feel like you're the victim because none of your clients are calling you back and you can't get a contract. At home, you might feel like you're more the persecutor, blaming others in your family for what's happening in your life. By nature, you might be a rescuer, wanting to help everyone in the community and always taking everyone's 5 minutes. You got a minute, right? You're happy to help everyone else without realizing that all of those energies are distractions from our own purpose. And we have to take control of ourselves by saying, I am worth standing up for. There is no one other than myself that I can control and have responsibility for. And that keeps you in that neutral state.
So I read a book recently. It's from Trevor Moad. And so he's Russell Wilson's mental coach. And he talks about the power of neutral thinking. The book is called It Takes What It Takes. But as I've read that book and as I've gotten through, how do you not go too much of the victim or too much of the prosecutor? Like, what tools or strategies can we use to make sure that we're neutral thinking as much as possible?
It's often just understanding, where is your thoughts around a situation coming from? Is it an emotional response? So one of the first things you want to do is check in on your state. How do I feel about what's happening right now? What emotions are present? Am I angry? Am I frustrated? Am I mad? Because once you can name your emotions, then you have an opportunity to address it by simply asking, why do I feel this way? Why am I mad about this decision? Why am I mad because my TL wants me to make 100 calls in a week? And when we ask ourselves why, then we're going to get an answer. And then The next question is to ask yourself, how does this impact me? Because often what we find out is there's nothing wrong with the action. It's what we're making that action mean. And that can then show up as a skill set. Let's use that same example. Well, I don't know what to say on the calls. There's a skill set gap. There's a mindset gap. No one's going to be home. A limiting belief. Yet when we ask ourselves questions that cause us to stop and think, we're going to learn more about why we're behaving the way that we do. And we ask ourselves enough questions until the emotion dissipates and we become neutral.
So are you saying that when we find ourselves in a certain state, we should begin to ask maybe a why and how questions to do a state change?
Well, state check first.
State check. Okay. Yes.
So first we want to figure out, why am I thinking or acting or having this response? Because that's what our state is. A state is the physical manifestation of something that's happening to us internally. So we want to do a 360 check on it. It can even be a response in your body. We often see that show up through anxiety, or you get that knot in your stomach or that pain in your chest. We want to identify, why is your body responding like this? What's happening about this situation that's causing you to show up?
Yeah, such as calming and yeah. A lot of that has to be some of the NLP stuff too, right?
Absolutely. So with NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, we work a lot with helping with changing neurological pathways, which is the way that your brain thinks and the way that your brain responds. So just imagine X happens, so then you do Y, the result is Z. With neuro-linguistics, we help to change that XYZ to get to a more resourceful and productive state for you. Everything that's going on in our life is a result of everything that's ever happened from the day that we were born.
So it's almost like shaking up the snow globe, creating new pathways of how to process information and deal. Do you tie a lot of that to high performance? And a lot of these people who are high performers have to rewire their brains and some of the traumas that they've experienced throughout their lifetime?
Absolutely. I like to think of it like a record player. Everything that's happening in your life is the record player. That's the soundtrack of our life. The record is your memories. And every time something happens, a new groove is being added to your memory, to your record. And we get into a habit. We start to play. And sometimes we can play it all the way through, no problems. And just like a record, sometimes there's a scratch. And we keep going back and forth over the same, and we can't figure out why we're stuck. So with coaching and neurolinguistic programming, we're able to lift that needle and move you forward and drop you into a new groove by changing the way that you think.
I like that. It's cool that thought process, that calming effect. Because sometimes, like, when we get in that space where we're in that state and it's like a frantic state, we don't have that calm and we don't have that cool. We get to a space of where we're erratic, and then we're working to deal with things in that erratic state, and we don't make the best decisions.
That's right. And so in those erratic states, what happens is now the front of your brain, your prefrontal cortex, is firing off solutions, looking for answers from a emotional response. And your body and your brain are trying to catch up to figure out what's happening. And the best way to calm yourself down from a frantic state is to take control of your breath. Simply, when you're feeling that anxiousness, when you're feeling that frenzy, to just stop, taking a deep breath, exhale, do it again, inhale, exhale, and just really get yourself centered. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, So Kimberly, I want to go back to this this record analogy, because I think one of the things that can be so, I feel like, has been really something I've had to really work with is there are times where the connections or the grooves in the record that we've created in our lives have transformed some element of trauma or pain or stimulus into something that drives our performance. And that groove has served us really well for a long period of time. And we've been doing that thing again. We've interpreted the thing that way. We've seen it that way. And that has worked. And there come moments in life where things change as we move through different seasons or different altitudes of performance. All of a sudden, that groove that used to play beautiful music now is just scratchy, right? Some of the hardest change to make is if you had the groove and the groove worked and now the groove doesn't work anymore. And I think that for a lot of us in seasons of our life or also in seasons of change in the industry, we're trying to reprogram grooves that we've got a history of saying, hey, that groove really worked for me. That groove got me where I was today. That groove took me from a wounded little child to a successful middle-aged man. And all of a sudden, that groove isn't serving me anymore. And that's been like heavy on my mind recently, like that there's certain things that actually have served me.
Well, what got us here doesn't always keep us going. And there's a great opportunity to often look at, does this way of being, does this behavior still support where I am in my life? We outgrow our behaviors. We outgrow our history. And so it makes sense to think that our previous behaviors, our previous actions no longer fit the person that we are today. As we grow, so do the actions required to keep that level of growth. It's very similar to a workout. The metabolism in your 20s is completely different than metabolism in your 40s, in your 50s, in your 60s. And while there are some that can outperform their body, as we age, we make modifications decade after decade to fit the body that we're in. The same thing has to happen with performance. We have to make modifications to fit the goals that we're achieving and the strength and where we want to be in our life.
You just struck a nerve, Kimberly. I just turned 60 2 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
And guess what? There's a difference. I love that analogy. And it's that conversation of what got you here won't get you there.
When you are now 60, your next decade is going to look different than the 50s. It has to. It doesn't mean it's going to be worse or less. It just is going to be different because you're different.
For the record, I've been told when you get above 60, those are your most productive years. They say you've gotten all of the BS out of your system. You learned, you failed, and now you understand it. At 60 and above, you don't have a lot of time to waste. So a lot of things become a lot more important to you than they were before. Because you look at the clock and you understand that you know that you have less in front of you than you do behind you. And at that place, you change in who you are because time is really, really important.
There's a center of gravity study. Not sure if you've been on a roller coaster recently or even in the past 20 years.
Oh, now we got jokes because I'm over 60. I don't know if you've been on a roller coaster over the past 20 years.
I don't know many adults that are spending time at roller coasters, so I just threw that out there. However, when you're young, when you're 5, 6, and you go to the theme park, man, you'll jump on those rides. You don't care how many loop-de-loops and upside downs you do and twirls, and you get off and you're ready to run to the next one. As we age, our center of gravity, which is the basis of how we stay grounded, changes. And as we get older, our center of gravity actually lowers, which means we can't hold those topsy-turvies and we can't handle all those loops the way that we used to. It's very similar to life. As we age, it's actually the opposite. The more that we've gone through, the more tolerance and the more resilience we have. Which is why by the time we get into our later lives, our later decades, things roll off our shoulders easier. We start to realize not everything matters the same.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit hometeam.com to learn more.
I get it loud and clear. So in this space, when we're having that conversation for our listeners, I don't believe that the demographic is 60. The demographic of our listeners is probably closer to 40. What do you tell a 40-year-old about this whole roller coaster of life and getting ready for these different changes where they'll start thinking about legacy and things of that nature? What do you tell a 40-year-old how they probably should view life? You're not telling them how they should view life, but how they probably should view life.
For a 40-year-old, I would say plan as if there's a forever and know that tomorrow's not promised.
Ooh, I like that.
In your 40s, it's a great time to get your life in order, not just your business. Do you have your affairs in order? Life insurance policies, your retirement funds? Are you making the financial investments so you can have a different choice when you do reach 60, 65? Are you setting yourself up now to have a future where work is an option and not a necessity?
That's a great way to look at it. And I like that idea about the life and life insurance, because I know when I was in my 30s, I had policies. Then when I got to my 40s, I realized what I did in my 30s was not enough. And so that idea where you say plan like you're going to live forever, I would say the same thing. Get the biggest life insurance policy you can buy in 30s, because your assets are going to accumulate to a place when you're in your 40s. That you're going to have to be able to support what you have. And what you had in your 30s is probably not going to support you when you get to your 40s.
One of the best ways to prepare for wealth is to create trust, have the planning conversations, create your life as if there's an estate. And this doesn't matter if you have $5,000 in the bank or $500,000 in the bank or $5 million in the bank. Look at the life that you have and the life that you're building. And whoever you're planning on leaving that to, make it as easy as possible for them by putting your assets into a trust, by having a financial advisor. Take care of your assets as if they matter, because they do. And the I'm going to earn it, I'm going to spend it as fast as I earn it mentality is what's going to cause many of our agents to stay in business much longer than they want to.
I believe we lose that focus, because I'm being transparent here. I know that when I was in my early 30s, I just didn't prepare as much as I probably should have. I didn't imagine my life being as big as it became. I didn't see it that way. And from my generation, it's a different thought process. In Bo's generation, it's a different evolution. And Daniel, you know, the sky's the limit. He's realizing it now. It's just a different ballgame. And we have to have that conversation with our friends, our loved ones, and the people that work under us, that the sky is really, 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 really the limit.
This week, I just came back from Worcester, Massachusetts, where we opened a new building that we renovated there. And I'm reminded that that sort of legacy and planning is sort of twofold. There's the psychological or emotional legacy that you leave, and there's a financial and a tactical legacy you leave. I was very blessed to have a father that left a huge emotional and psychological legacy. And he left a hot mess of a financial legacy. And part of that was great long-term thinking about what mattered and values and how to introduce that. And when my father passed away, there was a gentleman moving to America from Africa to start this institute that was going to help advance, you know, thought of the way that global scholars could engage with America. But there was no plan to put the property into a trust or a thing that functionally worked. And I spent the better part now of almost a decade both living into the psychological legacy and cleaning up the administrative legacy. And part of the administrative legacy comes from our unwillingness to deal with the fact that we are finite and that we are not going to be here. So the second part of that statement, know that there is no tomorrow is not promised, puts a responsibility onto us. And I think a lot of folks in our community are quick to think about how we want to be remembered by our grandchildren. We're quick to think about how we want our coworkers and our employers to. We think about our legacy and our image and how we want to be remembered. But then we don't do the tactical things around that that support that into the future.
Health is our first wealth. We can have an influence on our health. Wealth is the real wealth. And when we think about what do we want to do to protect our own mindset, our own well-being, how much better might you sleep at night if you know that you're financially sound, you're protected, that if something was to happen to you, that everything you've built and created has staying power, and that the loved ones that are left behind have ease to be able to handle your affairs? It's a hard thing to think about, and yet all of that is also attached to our mental well-being.
Part of the conversation that we really have to have, and I say this all the time, you can't get our life alive, so whether you like it or not, mortality is real. I believe that, like, for me, it's a little different because I'm at this point in my life and I'm clear that I'm not the same person I was at 48 and I'm not the same person I was at 39. The idea of mortality is real because I was walking down the steps yesterday and my knee started hurting. Somebody said, well, why'd your knee start hurting? I said, because I'm getting old, damn it. And that's real. And we have to deal with it that way. And so from your perspective, psychologically, I'm not even talking to people in my space, the 38-year-olds like Daniel, how do we have that conversation about embracing getting more mature? Notice I didn't say getting older, getting more mature, looking at the financial, looking at the personal health.
There's two parts of it. One is there's an acceptance, and you said it. We don't get out alive, yet we can live the biggest life possible and enjoy our life while we're here. So that's the first thing is, if you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, and yes, 60s and above, are you enjoying your life? Are you happy? Do you have sources of joy? That would be the first place I would start, because that's going to tell you if you're on the right track. If you're not happy, if you don't have those sources of joy, let's find you someone to talk to about it to get you there. And that could be a coach, that can be a therapist, a counselor, whatever that looks like. Because if you're living a life that you are proud of or content with, it's going to cause you to make the right choices. You'll often be living by your values. You're going to be living with an understanding of purpose or a sense of priorities. And that's going to give you a reason to stay focused and motivated during some of the most challenging times as they show up. So that's one. Get right with ourselves first. Then, just as we go to the doctor every year, which I hope you do for your annual physicals, and you get blood work and your exams. And if you don't, please start now. It's the same thing. Our financial well-being has its own physical health score, if you would. How healthy are your finances? We know that your financial health is connected to your mental health, your emotional health, your spiritual health, your stress levels, your relationships, the impact of what money does to other areas of our life. It's so subtle sometimes. It can be surprising the impact when our finances are not in a place that we want them to be. And we don't even often even know it's showing up. Yet when money's good, it tends to reflect in other areas of your life too. So we have to understand that there's a relationship between the life you're living and the income that you're earning. And if you're not where you want to be financially, work with someone to understand what does quality of life look like in financial terms. Step three, talk to a financial advisor. Talk about your plans. Talk about retirement. Look at life insurance, mutual funds. Consider joining communities where they talk about wealth and where wealth is common. Most of our community grew up in homes where we didn't talk about money, unless it was from a place of lack, right, or wishful thinking. And that's just how our community has been. You either had to be an athlete, right, or someone with great, immense talent, or you weren't.
One of the most powerful things I think about what you're saying is that start from perspective of having to acquire that which you don't have. That mindset, that groove in the record can actually carry you very far. And so there are many people walking around having achieved a relatively high degree of business or personal or financial success, still with a mindset that we were the ones that didn't have and had to go get. And to plan effectively for the future, one must adopt a mindset of abundance that one has, does not lack, and will have into the future, and therefore should plan for having in the future, which is a completely different mindset than the mindset that has powered, I know for me, most of my life, which is I didn't have and I had to go get. That mindset keeps me chasing to go get, doesn't put me into a planning, safety, preservation mindset or spirit that could think about the future in that way.
If you think about what your home life looked like growing up and whatever money was in your house growing up, that's stored in your subconscious. Whatever holidays, Christmas and trips, whatever money story you witnessed as a child is inside of you. Some of you can outgrow that story. Others are continuing the next chapter of it. And the only way that you can change that is to acknowledge it and then decide to create a different outcome from it if it's not serving you.
I love the NLP, the mindset, the neutral thinking. I'm just reflecting on a lot of things. To be completely real with you, I was thinking about my death a couple minutes ago and just thinking about that preservation and my children and legacy, and just kind of processing and thinking through some of those things.
It's a good time to think about these things, and it can be done in a lighter, harder spirit of, I get another 12 months ahead of me. Are my goals that I'm setting for myself, including what I want for my future, for in the next 5 years, 10 years? And if not, do I want to adjust my goals? Add a couple, two houses and just put those away into a savings account. Do I want to add five more houses and put that towards an investment? We know the fastest way to generational wealth is through real estate. What do I want to do so I can say 12 months from now, my financial picture looks better. My financial health is healthier. Thereby, my mental health and my mental well-being might be in a better state because of it too.
It's just what comes first, the chicken or the egg, right? If I have these things, I'll feel better emotionally, but I got to feel better emotionally in order for me to go get these things.
That's the whole concept of be, do, have. You have to be the person who you see other people being, then be able to do the things that they do so that you can have the things that they have. And when you come from a place where you didn't have, again, I'm being transparent. We used to always say, well, if I had their money, I could do this and then I could be that person. And the reality is that when you have that money and you don't know what to do with that money, you have that money, then you go broke, and then you can't ever be that person and you can't ever do what they did. And I'm being transparent here because I have had some pretty good money in my life. And I have attempted to do some things that I probably shouldn't have done, which ultimately I was never being that person that I really wanted to be. I just spent a whole lot of money. And that whole idea coming back to what you were saying earlier, Kimberly, about your family and being raised a certain way, that's still inside of you. It hasn't gone anywhere. We have to pour more water to dilute that so we can come up with better ideas just to become better people. That's the story of a 60-year-old. And I always say this, I want us to work more towards giving the story to a 30-year-old or 20-year-old. So when they get 50 and 60, they're not having these conversations. They might be having a bold conversation, which is totally different.
And the best thing to prepare for any next decade of your life is to prepare today. And we start simple. If you aren't ready to make an investment, let's start with your reserves. Do you have 3 to 6 months of reserves set aside for those times when the market may not be in your favor or when it's seasonality? Do you have reserves set up so you can take care of your business, your personal finances, and stay in production? That's the number one thing. If nothing else, if you're in your 20s, 30s, consider setting up your reserves account, minimum 3, ideally 6 months set aside. Now, these reserves accounts are not to be used as an ATM where I'm going to take out a little here and I'll pay this and I'll put it back later. Treat it like Fort Knox. Do not touch it. It is only in case of an emergency. And it's important to define what emergency means.
In that line, for me, what I found is that you put that money in a place where it's not accessible to you. The more difficult of a time that you have accessing it, the less the probability that you'll ever touch it.
That's right. Second, if you have credit cards, consider paying them off. Make that a goal for next year. Get down to zero in as many places as you can to be debt-free. We know that financial burden and financial stress impacts your mindset, your mental health. I'm going to drop the rim down for a moment. Unfortunately, real estate lands on the top 10 of deaths by suicide year after year. And we know that it's directly connected to the financial roller coaster of it. So if you can take control of your finances, living beneath your means, getting rid of expenses that you don't need, and help to keep your finances in a state that supports the life that you can afford to live, not that you want to live, it's going to set your mindset up for such great opportunities to stay neutral and productive.
I have one question. There's so many agents that, I wouldn't say just agents, but definitely agents that are in the hole right now. They've been digging themselves in a hole. And so we're not at a neutral place. We're not at equilibrium type of place. What are two or three things that people who feel that way can do to get themselves back to neutrality. Because we're talking about growth, and we're talking about legacy, we're talking about wealth, and that's not the energy that a lot of people that I speak to in our industry are feeling right now, you know?
I understand that, and I agree with it wholeheartedly. Get help. Are you in financial debt? Are you in credit card debt? Speak to a credit card counselor. Are you behind on your taxes? Go meet with an accountant, a CPA. Find out what your options are. Take control by looking at it and start cutting expenses where you can. Put yourself on a budget, which many of us don't know how to do. Set up formally in a business with an LLC and put yourself on salary so you can learn to live through paychecks. It's about tightening the ship so you can handle the rocky waters when they show up. And the first way to make a change is to accept the change, that things have to change.
I know we're coming up to the end of our time here, but I think that we're going to have the opportunity for this podcast to go live right around the turn of a year. And so the turn of a year is just another date on the calendar, but often very symbolic in our psychological lives. I would love if you just wanted to close us out with any tips on how we can maybe leverage the turning of a calendar in something that's permanent, not ephemeral, in making real thoughtful change inside of our mental and physical well-beings.
It's a simple mindset shift. It's a reminder that you get to. We all get to. We all get to have another day. We all get to have another opportunity. We all get to make the choice of how we're going to spend our time. And if the chosen industry is real estate, well, you get to wake up every day and decide how to run your business. So you can use this change of the calendar as an opportunity to say, what do I want to change? What's my fresh start look like for me? And if everything's working for you, great. However, there's always an opportunity to plus one. And so use this change, this turn of the year, as an opportunity to say, I get to, and you fill in that blank. Because when we take away the have to, there's a lot of obligation, the shoulds, the shame, the guilt, all of that goes away when we come from a place of gratitude that says, I get to. And for me, I get to design my life the way that I choose to. I get to spend time with people that I choose to spend time with, and I get to spend my money the way that I choose to spend my money. So look at it as an opportunity and decide, what do you get to do?
Thank you so much, Kimberly, from us at colorofmoneypodcast.com. Bo, Daniel, thank you so much for being here. And we're definitely going to invite you back because this has been very enlightening. Thank you so much.
Take care, everyone.
Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.